You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Friday edition of the Pronk Pop Show. I'm going to be covering the debate last night, as well as the endorsement this morning by Ben Carson of, guess who, Donald Trump. I'll be playing briefly some of the comments of Ben Carson, because I think they're very, very interesting and will surprise some people. Now, many are speculating that maybe promises were made of a cabinet position. It wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think that really happened. I think Ben Carson was really promoting a book, and he got a lot of attention, but he really had no pathway to victory, and he knew it. I wish he had gotten out about a week earlier, but he didn't. So I'm glad there are at least now two candidates that were competitors, rivals of Mr. Trump, namely Chris Christie, the current governor of New Jersey, as well as Ben Carson, a retired neurosurgeon, that have endorsed him. And yesterday, Mike Lee endorsed Ted Cruz. So we have people starting to endorse. Now, I think the more important endorsement by far, although probably I'm in a minority of this, was the fact that today Donald Trump is in St. Louis, packed crowd. Actually, they have two halls that they've rented, thousands waiting outside that couldn't get in. But who am I talking about? I'm talking about Phyllis Schlafly. She endorsed Donald Trump, and she has been active in the Republican Party for many, many years, is a noted conservative, and I'm going to play also her brief introduction to Donald Trump, and I'm glad that he got her endorsement, and she's making the point that this is very much a grassroots movement. But is it a grassroots movement for Trump? I really think it's a protest movement against the way the Republican Party has been led, and the disappointment, and I think a big disappointment, of the voter base and the leadership in Congress, both in the House and the Senate, and their inability and unwillingness to stand up to President Barack Obama. And that enabled and gave the opening to Donald Trump to enter the race. So if and that's the irony of the whole thing. If the Republican Party leadership had been doing their job, standing up to Mr. Obama, our president, Donald Trump probably wouldn't be running. It's only because their failure, and it is a failure, to balance the budget, defund those portions of the Department of Homeland Security dealing with immigration. Their failure to do that, their failure really to defund portions of Obamacare. In other words, the built-in check that our Constitution gives to Congress simply was not used by the Congress. They have a choice. They can either impeach him or they can cut off the money, and they did neither. So you have an open rebellion or revolt, however you want to call it, in the Republican Party amongst the voters that identified themselves as Republican. Now, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I gave up on the Republican Party about 10 years ago, almost exactly 10 years ago, because I was not happy with the massive deficits the Bush administration were running up, and the fact that they, and this is in hindsight, because I was on the fence. I did not approve the way the war was going in Iraq, and they simply waited too long to change the leadership of the Department of Defense as well as the generals running that war. And we had the surge, it worked, and then Obama pulled out. And the only reason you had Obama was the failure of leadership in the White House, the Department of Defense, and in the Pentagon. And the rest is more or less history, and now we have a mess in the Middle East. The entire Middle East is unstable. Syria, Iraq, Libya, just to mention three. Yemen, four. And it looks like we have a genocide of Christians, as well as some of other faiths, in Iraq and Syria. And this government is resisting the call to label it a genocide. That is shameful, as far as I'm concerned. Because it is a genocide. They're trying to make it Christian-free. Doesn't have a ring to it, Christian-free. It sounds like Nazi Germany in the 40s, when they're trying to make Europe and Germany and the territories they conquered Jew-free. Those were the Nazis. Now we have the Islamic State and radical Islam trying to make it Christian-free, and we have a Secretary of State and President won't join with the European leaders as well as those in the United Nations calling for condemnation, really calling it a genocide because that's exactly what's happening. We'll talk about that a little bit more next week, but I wanted to mention that because I'm amazed at this administration. Simply amazed. Can't wait till they're out of office. The sooner the better. Now, about the debate. I have not had time to listen to the whole debate. I've listened to big segments of it. The first 30 to 40 minutes were somewhat boring. It had a different tone. I call it boring. Donald Trump called it elegant. I think he was being polite. But the only thing was that I was a little disappointed in is I got the impression, again, that Donald Trump did not come to this debate that prepared. And that worries me. And I know debates, he doesn't consider debates as strong points, even though he believes he's won them. But he is going to have at least one or more debates with Hillary Clinton. So it's vitally important that he prepare for those. And he has a lot of time, but he needs to be a lot more sharper. He has to know the issues inside out, and I don't think he does. He relies too much, really way too much, on his stump speech. I'd like to play a few highlights from the debate, including the very end of the debate where they give their closing statements, because I believe this is the last debate. I don't think Donald Trump wants another debate. And really, after next Tuesday, I don't think we'll need another debate for the simple reason I think Donald Trump will probably get close to 300 more delegates if you count both Saturday and Tuesday. If he does that, remember, we're now in winner-take-all. Unlike in the previous states where it's proportional, depending on your vote, that's why Ted Cruz is very much still in the game. He's only 100 delegates behind. I say only. But the real question is, what states, Saturday and Tuesday, is he going to pick up? I think he could win, maybe Illinois, maybe Missouri. But if you look at the polls, and the problem with the polls is they're been unreliable. The polls are showing, with the exception of Ohio, which is still close, Trump's leading there, though, 6%. That's Florida. Where's Ohio? I thought I had Ohio at the top. Apparently, I don't. Anyway, Kasich is improving, and it's close. So it looks like Trump will win Florida. I'd be surprised if Rubio pulls it out. I think Rubio will be surprised if he pulls it out in Florida. And I think Trump would be shocked. But if Kasich pulls off a win in Ohio, and he should be the favorite, for the simple reason that is his home state. He's governor, sitting governor there. He's very, very popular. So we'll see. Some polls have Kasich winning. Some polls have Donald Trump. And it's a very fluid situation because as you get close to Election Day, people start focusing and changing their minds. So in my mind, it's somewhat too close to call. It should be Kasich, quite frankly. But if Donald Trump upsets him Tuesday in Ohio, That makes it almost forget about Rubio and Kasich. They're over with, obviously. And both of them, let's say luck strikes both Rubio and Kasich and they win. They'll stick around. The problem with that is they're so far behind, they'll never be able to catch Donald Trump. Never. And Donald Trump will win other states because they're all winner take all. So that's why I say Donald Trump should get somewhere between 250 and 350. And even if he doesn't win the biggies, he's still going to get a couple of hundred more delegates. He's well on his way to the magic number 1,237. So I don't see how Rubio and Kasich have any path to victory at all. If anything, by them staying in the race has made it increasingly difficult, not impossible, but increasingly difficult for Ted Cruz to catch up. And really, like I've said on many shows, by April Fool's Day, we'll know who the candidate is going to be for the Republican Party. And I still maintain that's going to be Donald Trump. Now, don't get the impression I'm a Donald Trump supporter. He was on my list of four candidates that I could vote for, but no longer. And at one time, so was Ted Cruz. I bumped him off my list yesterday. I just saw him making too many mistakes, and the biggest one was calling Donald Trump's voters low information. That's a beginner mistake. You don't say that. I know Rush Limbaugh uses that phrase. I use a similar one. I call them dots, the dummies on the street. But I'm not running for office, and neither is Rush Limbaugh. I think that's definitely better than calling them stupid or losers. That's what Trump uses. But you're not going to get any of the Trump supporters. The only person that's going to knock Donald Trump out of the race is Donald Trump. If he opens his mouth and says something that's beyond the pale, then, and that could happen, because he sometimes just says what's on his mind, not thinking of the impact. Now, as it looks more and more promising that he'll be the nominee, I think he's going to think about it before he launches, if you will. But I think it's almost impossible, and we'll know really by next Wednesday for sure, that anyone can catch Donald Trump. Now, it still remains open is how many delegates Donald Trump will have. I think he'll have somewhere between 1,100 and maybe 1,250, and you need 1,237. And if he gets that number of delegates, he'll have the most delegates. Obviously, if he gets 1,237, he becomes the nominee on the first ballot, which is the preferable outcome, by the way. Ted Cruz is going to give him a run for his money. But I don't see Ted Cruz breaking 900, and that might be optimistic. But we'll see. And then you have party delegates that can go either way. And there's still talk, rumors, gossip, news stories about the leadership trying to stop Trump. I think they're wasting their time. The only reason they're doing it, a lot of them make their living consulting and working for candidates as well as the Republican National Committee, and they're worried about their jobs, which they should be. Obviously, if you work for Rubio or Kasich, it doesn't look like you're going to have a job much longer. Maybe a little longer for Kasich. I don't know how many people on his staff are paid. Usually, most are volunteers, but you usually need to hire professionals. Don't work for nothing. They're capitalists. It's a business to them. So if Kasich has any plans, and so far they haven't worked out, remember, he's camped out in New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Michigan. And who won? Donald Trump. So it really hasn't worked for Kasich. See, my perception of Kasich, I was a big fan of Kasich when he was a congressman. I really had not followed Kasich since then. I knew he got elected governor. But what I'm hearing from a lot of people, he sounds like a moderate Democrat. He sounds like a progressive Republican. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why he's simply not popular with the conservative base at all. And that at one time were his biggest supporters, including me. Now, when you're a governor of state, especially if you're very popular, and it is, there are a lot of Democrats in Ohio. That's why it's very much a swing state, and it's a very important state to win. And And many people think that Hillary Clinton is a sure thing to get elected. She has a lot going for her in the sense that the Electoral College is the challenge. You got to carry certain states and pick up certain states. However, and this is really the unknown unknown, is Donald Trump. Donald Trump could carry many states that Republicans for a long time have never carried, including New York, New Jersey, maybe even California, although I think that's somewhat remote. But he is bringing into the Republican Party what used to be called Reagan Democrats. And why? Because he's hitting on two issues that are of concern to the working Americans, the blue-collar Americans. And that is they having to compete with illegal immigration, as well as the damage it's done to our manufacturing base in terms of NAFTA and other free trade agreements that are in the works. So by making both trade and immigration prominent issues in his campaign, he is attracting a lot of people that normally would never vote Republican. They might consider themselves independent. He's also attracting independents. Most demographics he's carrying. His problem is not in getting the nomination. His biggest challenge will be in trying to defeat Hillary Clinton. Because the conventional wisdom is he has a lot of unfavorables. And that doesn't play well with the Democratic voters. Well, we'll see. We will see. I think what's more telling is, and that's why I'm still optimistic that the Republicans should win, is the low turnout in the Democratic Party in terms of their primaries and caucuses. And the opposite, a high turnout in the Republican Party. Now, if that continues into the general election, and you're somewhat on, and that's debatable, for the simple reason, a lot of people that will definitely vote in the general election don't bother to vote in the primary. But what's going through my mind is there are apparently no real, how should I say this, enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton. And there are a lot of reasons for it. It's basically they don't trust her. They consider her a liar. She lied about Benghazi, and she's lied about what was on her server. And we haven't heard the end of that. I still maintain that Hillary Clinton will get the nomination. And the only wild card is when, not if, when will the FBI Director James Comey send a criminal referral to the Department of Justice for their evaluation and determination as to whether they're going to impanel a federal grand jury and indict and charge Hillary Clinton for violations in terms of the handling of classified information. There's a whole list of charges, but what they'll ultimately go to the grand jury depends on the evidence they've gathered, and I think that'll happen. I hope it will happen before the election. Actually, I was hoping it would happen really right around now, and I won't be surprised if one day I wake up and on the news is the FBI has submitted a criminal referral to the Department of Justice. Right now, I would say in the next 60 days. 75 at most. If they're going to do it, they should do it before the convention. That would be, there's no good time to do this. And remember, and this is the key, then that it's the FBI cannot impanel a grand jury. Only the attorneys in the Justice Department that are in charge of the case can do that. So they can take their time, and I think they will take their time, evaluating the case. And that's why this thing will drag on beyond the election. I don't think that's right for the American people, but I think that's exactly what's going to happen. So the sooner James Comey makes the right call, then the clock starts running in terms of the Justice Department. They'll take 2, 3, 4 months or longer. And remember, most of them are Democratic appointees, and even the career ones are Democrats, mostly. So those that are hanging your hat on Hillary will never be the nominee for the simple reason she's facing criminal indictment. I agree with her. She said it's not going to happen. And the reason is very simple. Barack Obama is going to pardon her. Well, enough about the Democrats, because really I wanted to talk about the debate last night. For those that are new to the show, I need to make this announcement. The way you listen to the show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you go there, under my photograph, you'll have links to the latest 60 to 80 shows. Then you'll have some of the material I've looked at in preparing the show. Photographs, YouTube videos, articles, and I usually throw in a couple of songs. And this one I have several, as well as information, for example, the most recent polls, as well as information on the delegates that are going to be selected. And the best place for that information is the Green Papers. I don't mind giving them a plug because they really have the details. And just so you understand, Tuesday in Florida, 99 delegates, winner take all. So if you win, you get 99 delegates. That's why it's critical for Rubio to win. In Ohio, it's 66 delegates. So you can do the math. That's over 150, over 160. But, and this is important, North Carolina has 72, Missouri has 52, and Illinois has 69. So Ted Cruz, while he might not and will not really win either Ohio or Florida, could win in those other states. Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina. Probably his best bet is North Carolina. And don't forget that on this Saturday, Wyoming has 29 and Guam has 9. And the District of Columbia, yes, there's some Republicans there, have 19. So that's a lot of delegates that are up. It's not as many as Super Tuesday, but this could really, if Trump's not going to win them all. You might think so, but he's not. But he's going to get a big chunk of those delegates. I would say 250 is definitely in the ballpark, and it could be as many as 350. And when you add the current count, he's over 400. That puts him over 700 delegates. So he's more than halfway to getting the nomination. That's why I say by the 1st of April, and there's some more primaries in March, and then there's towards the end of March there's a lull, and then back in April we'll start getting more primaries, and there's still primaries in May and June, including some biggies like California and New York. So it's definitely not over. But the problem Ted Cruz has is they all had this challenge. You had 17 people in the beginning. At least five shouldn't have been on the stage, quite frankly, but they were. And several just stayed around because they were doing 5, 10% of the polls. Eventually, they dropped out, saw the handwriting on the wall, but we're still down to four. By now, I would have hoped we're down to two or three at the most. Four is just too many. And frankly, Rubio should have gotten out. And I think both Rubio and Kasich should have gotten out, because if you want to defeat Trump, and that's about 60% of the Republican Party, you can't split your vote amongst three people. It really should be a Cruz-Trump contest. Even if it were, I don't think Cruz would have won. For the simple reason is Donald Trump is a personality, a star, and he's playing to the audience. He's a master manipulator of the press. And if you notice, and he points this out, he's not using teleprompters like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. He just comes out and talks. Now, he does what I do every weekday on this show. I come out. Now, I don't stand up. I sit down and talk. But I have to change the subject, and that's the challenge for me. He can repeat his stump speech. Now he can change the order of it, and he can put news items in it and tailor it a little to the audience that he's appearing in front of. But the challenge I have is to cover breaking news events and give my opinion on it. And he's right. There are many people, one of the biggest fears of most people is what? Giving a speech. Now, I always found that strange because I used to give a lot of speeches in front of technical audiences. What I'm talking about is financial advisors, CPAs, people that have credentials after the name in the financial services industry. So they tend to ask technical questions. So you had to be prepared. And the way I would do it, I would always have slides, because while I much prefer not having the slides, I know that some people grasp concepts better if they see it visually. So I would talk, have the slides. I would never read the slides. I would never read a speech. Now, I'm telling you this because if you want to connect with the audience, that's what you need to do. And why several of the candidates were very good at that, several were not. And the key in communication, you got to keep it concise, clear, convincing, and most importantly, you have to connect with your audience. Donald Trump does all of that, and he does it very well. My issue with him is the trust issue. Because even though his position on immigration on paper is very good, I simply have some reservations there.
Mr. Trump, let me start with you. Last night you told CNN, quote, "Islam hates us." Did you mean all 1.6 billion Muslims?
I mean a lot of them. I mean a lot of them.
Do you want to clarify the comment at all?
Well, you know, I've been watching the debate today, and they're talking about radical Islamic terrorism or radical Islam, but I will tell you there's something going on that maybe you don't know about and maybe a lot of other people don't know about, but there's tremendous hatred, and I will stick with exactly what I said to Anderson Cooper.
Let me comment on that, because I've studied this more than I want to, quite frankly. Donald Trump is exactly right. Now, does Donald Trump really think that every Muslim, remember, there are 1,600 million. That's over five times the population of the United States. There are a lot of Muslims in the world. They're not all in the Middle East, and they don't all hate us. But here's the problem, and I've seen estimates, and they vary all over the lot. Anywhere from 10 to 20% are radical Islamists. They're jihadists. They believe in terror. They're religious fanatics. Now, let's say it's just 10%. 10% of 1,600 million is 160 million. That's half the population of the United States. They're religious fanatics that want to go back to the Middle Ages. And they don't tolerate other religions, period. And they're very much, what they want is to be ruled by Sharia law under a caliphate and spread Islam throughout the world. Very similar to the communists. Now, the communists weren't a religion, far from it, but they wanted to spread communism throughout the world. The problem is, if you truly believe and want to live under Sharia law, fine. You're going to have to leave the United States because the American people want to be ruled by the laws of these lands and the U.S. Constitution. They don't want to be part of a theocracy. And that's the problem. How do you determine a good Muslim from a bad Muslim? And Donald Trump doesn't fall for the trap. There are a lot of them, and he's right. If it were 20%, we'd be talking 320 million, in other words, the population of the United States today. Now, they're not in one country, and that's part of the problem. And there are many countries. And they truly believe it. And it's the heart of their religion. And they'll point to the Quran and those passages. Now, I'm not going to do that. But I agree with Trump on this. And it gets back to political correct. Oh, you can't say that. Excuse me, I think you better do your homework. These people want to kill you. And if they get a hold of you, they will kill you. We better wake up to that threat. And it's a real threat. It's not an imaginary one. And we've had two administrations that, frankly, were politically correct when it came to the Muslims. They were incapable of doing their homework. If they had done their homework, they would come to the conclusion that Donald Trump has come to. Now, let me continue this segment.
Senator Rubio, your supporter, Republican Senator Jeff Sessions, said in response to Mr. Trump's comment last night, I'm sorry, Senator Jeff Flake, I apologize. Your supporters, Republican Senator Jeff Flake, said in response to that comment, Republicans are better than this. Do you agree?
Well, let me say, I know that a lot of people find appeal in the things Donald says because he says what people wish they could say. The problem is presidents can't just say anything they want. It has consequences here and around the world. And so let me give you one. 2 days ago, I met this extraordinary couple who are on furlough because they're missionaries in Bangladesh. It's a very tough place to be a missionary. It's Muslim. And their safety and security very much relies upon friendly Muslims that live alongside them that may not convert but protect them and certainly look out for them. And their mission field really are Muslims that are looking to convert to Christianity as well. And they tell me that today they have a very hostile environment in which to operate in, because the news is coming out that in America, leading political figures are saying that America doesn't like Muslims. So this is a real impact. There is no doubt that radical Islam is a danger in the world. I can also tell you that if you go to any national cemetery, especially Arlington, you're going to see crescent moons there. If you go anywhere in the world, you're going to see American men and women serving us in uniform that are Muslims.
Let me stop there. Marco Rubio doesn't explain this. Missionaries can't go to Saudi Arabia. You can't even bring a Bible into Saudi Arabia. They don't tolerate other religions, period. And if you're a Muslim and convert Christianity and devout Muslims learn of it, they will kill that convert. They consider him an apostate. Oh, it is dangerous to try to convert Muslims to other religions, because any Muslim that does that is putting a death sentence on his head. So it's questionable that we send people, missionaries, to try to convert the Muslims, for the simple reason, if they're successful, many of those converts will be killed. It's only in a nation that tolerates many religions could that Muslim feel safe. If it is a country like Saudi Arabia or the Islamic State, it's a death sentence. The problem is Islam. And the only people that are going to change it are Muslims. We're not going to change it, but we have to be aware that, as Donald Trump phrases it, millions, hundreds of millions of Muslims hate us. We have to be honest with the American people that that is the situation. Not close our eyes to it and make believe that they love us, because they don't. And the Muslim Brotherhood is a very political organization, and they have front groups in this country. Ultimately, they want to overthrow the Constitution and replace it with Sharia law. The American people don't want that, and they will fight them. And there are still Muslims in this country that are very loyal to this country, and they like it here. They don't want to live in Saudi Arabia or Iraq or Iran. That they fled those countries. They want to practice their religion, which is fine with me. The concern of the American people, Donald Trump, is for those radical Islamic jihadists, so-called holy warriors, that are at war with the United States and at war with the European countries and simply do not tolerate other religions. And even within Islam, there's the big divide between the Sunni Muslims, which are the majority, roughly around 89%, and the Shia Muslims. Shia, which are primarily Iranians and Iraqis. There's no love between the two. And each considers the other one an apostate. And that's why the Islamic State, if they capture a Shia, they kill them, usually on the spot. They cut their throats or put a bullet in their head, maybe torture them and then kill them. That's what we're up against. And Donald Trump is right. He points to the videos on YouTube where they're executing people by beheadings, burning them to death, blowing them up, putting them in cages and drowning. And if they get a hold of Christians, they crucify them or kill them outright. So I side with Donald Trump here, and so do the majority of the American people.
Against the Geneva Conventions, you said, quote, so they can kill us, but we can't kill them? It is against federal, military, and international law to target civilians. So how will you order the military to target the families of suspected terrorists while also abiding by the law?
First of all, let me go back to the other just for a second. In large mosques in all over the Middle East, you have people chanting death to the USA. Now, that does not sound like a friendly act to me. As far as the families are concerned and as far as the law is concerned, we have a law. This all started with your question on waterboarding. We have a law that doesn't allow right now waterboarding. They have no laws, they have no rules, they have no regulations. They chop off heads, they drown 40, 50, 60 people at a time in big steel cages, pull them up an hour later, everyone dead, and we're working on a different set of parameters. Now, we have to obey the laws, okay? Have to obey the laws, but we have to expand those laws, because we have to be able to fight on at least somewhat of an equal footing, or we will never, ever knock out ISIS and all of the others that are so bad. We better expand our laws, or we're being a bunch of suckers, and they are laughing at us. They are laughing at us.
Senator Rubio, would you, as president, pursue a policy of targeting the families of suspected terrorists?
No, of course not. And we don't have to in order to defeat terrorists. The way you defeat terrorists is pretty straightforward. It's difficult to do, but it has to be done. when I'm president of the United States, the best intelligence agencies in the world that right now have been hamstrung, they're going to be expanded, and the best intelligence agencies in the world are going to find terrorists. And then the best military in the world, which needs to be rebuilt because Barack Obama is gutting our military, he's going to leave us with the smallest army since the end of World War II, and the smallest navy in a century, and the smallest air force we've ever had. We are going to rebuild that military, and that military is going to find the terrorists and destroy them. And if we capture any of these terrorists alive, they're not going to have the right to remain silent, and they're not going to go to a courtroom in Manhattan. They're going to go to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and we will find out everything they know, and we'll do so legally.
Senator Cruz, you've talked about changing the rules of engagement in battle against ISIS. Would that include targeting the families of suspected terrorists?
No, of course not. We've never targeted innocent civilians, and we're not going to start now. But
let me interject here. Excuse me. This is ahistorical. Oh, we have targeted civilians. Do none of these gentlemen remember World War II? Our air forces, they were part of the Army then, the Army Air Corps, bombed cities, killed hundreds of thousands of civilians, both in Germany and Japan. Guess who lives in cities? Civilians, families, children. You see, one of the problems is we have four candidates and not one of them has served in the military. And I believe three of them are attorneys. They really don't understand war. And the fact that we have people that are trying to kill us and we play by rules of engagements where you got to call up a lawyer, can I shoot? That's the problem. And then you have a press that caters to this. When we're at war, innocent people on both sides get killed. And both sides engage in military actions that kill civilians. And that has been the case throughout history, and the United States is no exception to that. Let's continue with Senator Cruz.
But listen, Jake, I understand. People are scared, and for 7 years we faced terrorist attacks, and President Obama lectures Americans on Islamophobia. That is maddening. But the answer is not simply to yell, China bad, Muslims bad. You've got to understand the nature of the threats we're facing and how you deal with them. And yes, it is true, there are millions of radical Islamic terrorists who seek to kill us. We need a president, commander-in-chief focused on fighting them. And I'll tell you frankly, one concern I have with Donald is that although his language is quite incendiary, when you look at his substantive policies on Iran, he has said that he would not rip up this Iranian nuclear deal. I think that's a mistake. The Ayatollah Khamenei wants nuclear weapons to murder us. I'll give you another example, dealing with radical Islamic terrorism. On Israel, Donald has said he wants to be neutral between Israel and the Palestinians. As president, I will not be neutral. And let me say, this week, a Texan, Taylor Force, he was an Eagle Scout, he was a West Point graduate, he was an Army veteran. He was murdered by a Palestinian terrorist this week in Israel. And I don't think we need a commander-in-chief who is neutral between the Palestinian terrorist and one of our strongest allies in the world, the nation of Israel.
Senator Cruz. Mr. Trump, we're going to come to you in a second, but I want to go to Hugh Hewitt, who has questions on this exact line of subject.
Mr. Trump, I want to follow up on the quote that Senator Cruz used. You said you would want to be, quote, sort of a neutral guy. He did mention Taylor Force. He was a West Point graduate. He was a war hero. He was a Vanderbilt graduate student. He was killed in a Palestinian terror attack near Tel Aviv. Many others were killed. And the Israeli government says the Palestinian Authority is inciting this. Do you still want to stay neutral when the Palestinian Authority is inciting these attacks?
First of all, there's nobody on this stage that's more pro-Israel than I am. Okay? There's nobody. I am pro-Israel. I was the Grand Marshal, not so long ago, of the Israeli Day Parade down Fifth Avenue. I've made massive contributions to Israel. I have I have tremendous love for Israel. I happen to have a son-in-law and a daughter that are Jewish, okay? And two grandchildren that are Jewish. But I will tell you, I think if we're going to ever negotiate a peace settlement, which every Israeli wants, and I've spoken to the toughest and the sharpest, they all want peace, I think it would be much more helpful. I'm a negotiator. If I go in, I'll say I'm pro-Israel, and I've told that to everybody and anybody that would listen. but I would like to at least have the other side think I'm somewhat neutral as to them so that we can maybe get a deal done. Maybe we can get a deal. I think it's probably the toughest negotiation of all time, but maybe we can get a deal done.
Senator,
as far as, and by the way, just so you understand, as far as Iran, I would have never made that deal. I think it's maybe the worst deal I've ever seen. I think it's the worst deal I've ever seen negotiated. I will be so tough on them, and ultimately that deal will be broken unless they behave better than they've ever behaved in their lives, which is probably unlikely.
Senator Rubio.
You know, we need a president who understands the national security interest of this country. The reason we are friends and allies with Israel is they are a liberal democratic country that share our values. They're our strongest ally in the region. We get billions in intelligence resources, billions in military resources, and the Palestinian Authority that Donald, along with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, say they want to treat neutrally the same as Israel. The Palestinian Authority is in a unity government with Hamas, a terrorist organization. They pay the families of these terrorists who murder people, and this is exactly the moral relativism Barack Obama has. And the answer is not scream all Muslims bad. Let me give you an example of a Muslim, for example, we ought to be standing with. President al-Sisi of Egypt, a president of a Muslim country who is targeting radical Islamic terrorists. He's hunting them down and stopping them. Our focus needs to be on keeping this country safe.
I couldn't agree more with Senator Cruz. Donald Trump is a liberal Democrat from New York. And New York, outside of Israel, has, last time I checked, the largest percentage of its population, in terms of numbers, millions of Jews. Now, here's the problem I have with Trump. Both Republican and Democratic administrations have tried and tried and tried to negotiate a deal between Israel and the Palestinian Authority, and on several occasions, they walk away from it. It's mission impossible. The only way you're going to bring the Palestinians to the negotiation table is take sides and take the side of Israel, the state of Israel. The same thing applies to Iran. What brought Iran to the negotiation table was sanctions, and then Barack Obama and his Secretary of State threw it away. And for all practical purposes, Iran has a bomb, and it's only a matter of time before they have several of them. And once they do, they'll test it. Be a couple of years, but they're that close. At some point, Israel is going to have to take out the nuclear capability of Iran. They'll make that decision all by themselves. They would much prefer a united attack of both the United States and Israel taking out the nuclear weapons and their factories, bomb factories, as well as missile factories. And that's going to happen. It's just a question of when. And the best people to decide that are the ones with the information, and that's Israel and the United States. The problem is will. But I'm convinced if Israel feels that they're on the verge of being annihilated, they will attack. And they'll do it prior to running a big risk of being attacked. So I agree with Senator Cruz, not Trump, on this. And I understand where he's coming from, but even Donald Trump is not that good a negotiator, because it takes two people, actually in this case three parties, have to agree to come to agreement, and one side simply does not want to do it because the political leader that does it is cutting his own throat. It's irreconcilable differences. They're irreconcilable. They want to wipe the Israeli state and its people off the map. That's their goal, and it really hasn't changed, and it's too bad. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I have two things I have to play, and I'm not finding, and I do apologize for this, I thought I had spiked it out. There was a brief section, maybe this is it, let's hope it is, on immigration.
Mr. Trump, I do want to come to you. Will you also, in your answer, address how long you think that pause would be and what that pause would look like?
Well, first of all, I think, and I know the H-1B very well, and that's something that I frankly use, and I shouldn't be allowed to use. We shouldn't have it. Very, very bad for workers. And second of all, I think it's very important to say, well, I'm a businessman, and I have to do what I have to do, and it's sitting there waiting for you, but it's very bad. It's very bad for business in terms of, it's very bad for our workers, and it's unfair for our workers, and we should end it. Very importantly, the Disney workers endorsed me, as you probably read, and I got a full endorsement
because they're the ones that said, and they had a news conference, and they said he's the only one that's going to be able to fix it, because it is a mess. I think for a period of a year to 2 years, we have to look back and we have to see, just to answer the second part of your question, where we are, where we stand, what's going on. We have to sort of take a strong, good, hard look and come up with plans that work. And we're rushing into things, and we're leading with the chin. We're leading with people that don't know what they're doing in terms of our leadership. I would say a minimum of 1 year, maybe 2 years.
I would end H-1B visas. It's been abused, and they can investigate it, and that's what they're going to find. Now, I think what Donald Trump wants to do is where you have people with graduate degrees, master's degrees, PhDs from the finest schools, give them H-1B visas. That's not what's going on now. What's going on now is corporations such as Disney, but there are others, including Donald Trump's own company, take advantage of the program. And why? Because they hire cheap labor relative to what they would have to pay for an American to do the same job. And I think that's unconscionable. And Congress has created this mess and hasn't really addressed the abuses. Why? Who gives big campaign contributions to House and Senate races? Yes, the executives and owners of the large corporations. They want the H-1B visas so they can hire cheap foreign labor and bring them into the United States. It's supposed to be temporary. They're here for years. And you've heard the stories, and I related one in a past show where a lady, I know she was working for Verizon for 18 years, and then had to train her replacement and then was terminated. That isn't right, folks. It's absolutely not right. And we have lawyers in Congress promoting this garbage. Let's continue.
Thank you, Mr. Trump. Senator Cruz, I want to bring you in very quickly on this. The United States averages about 1 million new permanent legal immigrants a year and hundreds of thousands more guest workers. Right. What should the right level be?
Well, we need to redefine our legal immigration system so that it meets the needs of the American economy. Right now, we're bringing in far too many low-skilled workers. What that is doing is driving down the wages of hard-working Americans. Our system isn't working. And then on top of that, we've got a system that is allowing in millions of people to be here illegally. And the answer to that, I've laid out a very, very detailed immigration plan on my website. We're going to build a wall, triple the border patrol. We're going to end sanctuary cities. And let me tell you how we're going to do that. We're going to cut off federal taxpayer funds to any city that defies federal immigration law. We're going to end welfare benefits for anyone who is here illegally. And the thing to understand, Stephen, we can solve these problems. It's not that we don't know how to do it. It's that we're lacking the political will. Neither of the parties in Washington wants to do this. The Democrats support illegal immigration because they view those illegal immigrants as potential voters, and far too many of the Republicans are doing the bidding of Wall Street and the special interest, and they view it as cheap labor. We need instead leadership that works for the working men and women of this country. We need an immigration system that takes care of the jobs of the working men and women of this country.
Senator Rubio, did you want to weigh in?
Well, I would add, when you talk about the millions of green cards that are coming in, those are actually not workers at all. They're just coming in primarily based on family connection. And let me tell you, by the time my parents came in 1956, I acknowledge that my parents came to the U.S. on a family-based system. The problem is nothing looks like it did 60 years ago. The 21st century economy simply is not creating enough jobs for people that don't have skills. When my parents came, they had a very limited education. My father stopped going to school when he was 9 years old because his mother died, and he had to work, and he would work the next 70 years of his life and never go back to school. And I'm grateful every day that America welcomed them. But today, in the 21st century, 60 years later, finding jobs when you don't have skills is very difficult. We need to move to a merit-based system of immigration, not just on H-1B, particularly on green cards. The primary criteria for bringing someone from abroad in the 21st century should be, what skills do you have? What business are you going to open? What investment are you going to make? Or what job are you going to be able to do when you arrive in the United States?
Education.
I'm glad they finally got to immigration. But what didn't you hear? for many of them. They don't go after the employers of the illegal aliens. That's why the invasion continues every single day. It's going on right now. In the last 15 to 20 years, anywhere from 30 to 50 million illegal aliens have invaded this country, broke into our country, came uninvited, purchased fraudulent documents so they can work here. And every day they're working here, they're committing a crime, and so is the employers that employ these people. That's the attraction, the primary magnet reason for the invasion and the continual invasion is jobs. And that is what the American people are upset about. That's why they're angry, and they have every right to be angry, because they're being betrayed by both political parties, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And they don't mention it. They don't mention how to roll back the invasion. They don't touch it. They don't even mention that 11, 12 million number that you've heard for the last 10, 15 years is bogus. It's a gross underestimate of the number of illegal aliens that are here by the Census Bureau. That's been criticized many, many times. You got to watch out for the Republicans, because they'll make a strong case, as did Senator Cruz, about we're going to increase the number of Border Patrol. That's fine. But if you truly want to roll back the invasion, what you really need to do, and the problem is, not only enforce the immigration law at the border, you have to enforce it within the United States. In other words, in Dallas, for example, or any city. That requires buildings, judges, investigators, and attorneys, agents, or officers to prosecute people that are here illegally. And when you have 30 to 50 million of them, it's going to take 10 years. The problem didn't happen overnight. It happened mainly in the last 15 to 20 years under both Democratic and Republican administrations. That's why the American people feel betrayed. That's why Democrats are flooding or becoming Republicans so they can vote for Donald Trump as well as Ted Cruz. They've had it up to here. Now, the problem I have with all these gentlemen is these are promises. I've heard this song and dance before. I've been waiting for the fence, the double fence with the road and cameras and technology to stop the invasion. Where is it? It's built in certain parts. In other parts, there are either no fence or there are holes through it. And it's not well patrolled. The laws aren't being enforced. And it's not just at the border. It's in the United States. And about 40% of the problem, who knows what the real number is, are people that come here legally on a visa as a student, a tourist, a business person, and overstay their visas and stay here and work here and live here. No mention at all on any of these candidates about going after the employers. See, you don't do that. But where is the money coming from that is corrupting Congress? Oh, most of it from large businesses and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They want the cheap labor. They give it to both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And yes, they prefer that the people come here legally, and that's the other part of the puzzle that's not really examined. Yeah, about a million come here each year. If you ask most people, that's too high already. But what do the Democrats and the Republicans want to do? They want to increase it first to 2 million and 3 million per year. Are the American people asking for that? No, they're asking it for the exact opposite, for the laws of these lands to be enforced. That's why you need to be very, very careful with both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. They have rather strong positions on paper or on their website, but will they follow through? Because I've heard this song and dance before. Where's the fence? Still not built. Where's the enforcement of immigration law within the United States? There's a little of it, but it's so small, the resources, the manpower are so limited, it's a joke. Not when you have 30 to 50 million. And they get criticized. How are you going to deport the 11 or 12 million? Simple. You go after the employers, and when every night on the television network in every town and city in the United States, you see a story of a business or anybody that an employer that hires illegal going to jail, soon the word goes out and there are no jobs for illegal aliens and there's no welfare and there's no education. These lawyers talk a nice game, Rubio and Cruz. I believe Kasich's a lawyer, but I'm not sure. But they're part of the problem. I know they've been... Rubio is a perfect example. He said he was against amnesty in 2010 when he ran for the Senate. He knew if he had any other position, he never would have got elected. He gets elected, becomes a member of the Gang of Eight, including Schumer, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, two other people, the other senator from Arizona and Illinois, another Democrat. There were four Democrats, four Republicans. Here's the point. What was the Democratic Party trying to do? They were trying to first give amnesty to illegals. When it was clear that couldn't happen, they wanted to give a pathway to citizenship, starting with first a work permit, then a green card. A work permit, as it says, lets you work here for a period of time. A green card, you heard that several times, means you're a permanent resident. It's the next step is citizenship. You got to apply for it, but that green card lets you stay in this country permanently. And what they're about, and I think Trump supporters better wake up to this. Oh, he wants to deport him. I don't think that's going to happen because he never spells out how, even though he's asked. But I'm going to do it. It requires management. Okay. Let's say in 8 years of the Trump administration, he deported 5-10 million. Then he's going to turn around and let him apply for an expedited visa and come back. American people are not supporting that. They want the immigration laws that exist today enforced, which means if you're here illegally, you go home and you don't come back. And all of these politicians, all of these candidates, better wake up to the fact if they double-cross the American people this time, the Republican Party is done, and the Democratic Party, they're leaving in droves because they know they have been betrayed, lied to, and I promised I would do this. Let's hear the four gentlemen, the four finalists, their closing statements.
Governor Kasich.
Well, I'd like to say to all of you, the American people, I have run an unwavering positive campaign for President of the United States. I've tried to be positive in such a way as to show my record, my accomplishments, my vision. And I wanted to raise the bar in presidential politics so our kids can take a look at the way you can run for president and you will someday maybe be President of the United States. You know, sometimes being positive isn't all that interesting. But it's very interesting to my family, my children, and so many supporters that I meet all across the country, and I will continue to run a positive campaign. I can fix the problems in Washington. I've done it before. And, in fact, I want to turn power, money, and influence back to you, the American people, so that you can be in the schools and on the streets fighting drugs and dealing with the issues of poverty. We can do this together. Allow me to take care of the federal issues. When I send the power back and the money and the influence to you, then you can strengthen our neighborhoods and our families. That's where the spirit and strength of America is. But ask the people, my friends in Illinois, and of course, my beloved Buckeyes, to consider me on Tuesday, and please let me have your vote. God bless.
Senator Rubio.
It is great to be here back at home in Miami. It's hard to believe that just two decades ago, my father was just a bartender working in this city. And now his son stands on the stage here as a candidate for the highest office in the land. My parents never wanted me to go into politics in particular or anything else. They just wanted me to have the opportunity to live out all the dreams they once had for themselves. And that was possible because America is a special country. But that was not an accident. America is great because each generation before us did what needed to be done. They solved their problems. They confronted their challenges. They embraced their opportunities. And for over two centuries, each generation has left the next better off. Now the moment has arrived for our generation to do our part. And I'm telling you tonight, if you vote for me here in Florida and everywhere across this country on Tuesday, when I'm elected president, this generation will do its part. We will do whatever it takes to ensure that our children inherit from us what we inherited from our parents, the single greatest nation in the history of all of mankind. Senator Cruz. Senator Cruz.
What an incredible nation we have. That the son of a bartender and the son of a mailman and the son of a dishwasher and a successful businessman can all stand on this stage competing and asking for your support. In just a few months, one of us is going to stand on the debate stage with Hillary Clinton. And the choice we are making today is who will best defend our values, who will best defend your values and fight for you. I have to tell you, I cannot wait to stand on that stage with Hillary Clinton and say, Madam Secretary, you were asking for a third term of a failed administration. You were asking for millions more to remain in stagnant jobs, for millions more steel workers to be out of work, for wages to remain low, for young people not to have a future. We can do better. We can instead repeal Obamacare, abolish the IRS, unleash millions of jobs, defend the Bill of Rights, defend the Second Amendment, religious liberty, stand with our cops and our firefighters and our soldiers, and we can keep America safe. That's the choice I will put to her this fall.
Mr. Trump?
Thank you very much. The Republican Party has a great chance to embrace millions of people that it's never known before. They're coming by the millions. We should seize that opportunity. These are great people. These are fantastic people. These are people that love our country. These are people that want to see America be great again. These are people that will win us the election and win it easily. These are people that once the election is won, will be able to put Supreme Court justices up that will do a fabulous job. Because let me tell you, if we lose this election, you're going to have 3, 4, or maybe even 5 justices, and this country will never, ever recover. It will take centuries to recover. So I just say, embrace these millions of people that now, for the first time ever, love the Republican Party and unify. Be smart and unify.
That was Donald Trump and the four other total of four candidates giving their closing statement. I have to wrap up the show, and I'll do it with a very fitting song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.